Across Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. Thursday's World Summit on Fighting Corruption allowed Britain and the United States to look at their own policies and their role as shelters for billions of dollars stolen by corrupt politicians in developing countries. The London summit shifted the focus to global corruption. It turned the spotlight of blame away from African generals, oligarchs, and corrupt dictators toward the rich countries whose banks and real estate brokers have been the benefactors of the stolen wealth of nations. British Prime Minister David Cameron announced measures including a public register intended to force companies to name their real owners, a measure that British government officials claim will be the first of its kind. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said tens of billions of dollars in stolen money, funds that could be used for education or building bridges in underdeveloped lands, instead are hidden in banks in countries including ours.
Corruption writ large is as much of an enemy, because it destroys nation states, as some of the extremists we're fighting or some of the other challenges that we have faced.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Brazil's suspended president, Dilma Rousseff, is vowing to fight back after the Senate voted for an impeachment trial for alleged corruption and to temporarily remove her from power. Flanked by weeping cabinet ministers, Rousseff used what may be her last presidential palace speech to again insist she did nothing wrong and assert her belief that the impeachment is a coup attempt. Look at our website at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Members of Congress fought their way past a bagpiper, a horn player, and a group of protesters to reach the building where presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump held a highly anticipated meeting with House Speaker Paul Ryan. Thursday's raucous scene outside Republican National Committee headquarters featured an impersonator wearing a giant Donald Trump head, mirrored the unpredictable presidential election campaign that has fractured the identity of the party. Ryan commented on the meeting.
Look, there are people who are for Donald Trump, who are for Ted Cruz, or for John Kasich, who are for Marco Rubio and everybody else. And it's very important that we don't fake unifying, we don't pretend unification, that we truly and actually unify so that we are full strength in the fall.
Ryan said last week he was just not ready to endorse Trump's campaign and again did not fully embrace his candidacy. But Ryan declared that he was very encouraged about working with Trump. Facebook has made public its internal editorial guidelines in the latest attempt to fight charges of political bias in the news stories it promotes to its 1.6 billion users. Technology news website Gizmodo on Monday reported that a former Facebook employee said workers routinely suppress news stories of interest to conservative readers while artificially adding other stories to the trending list. A 28-page internal document offers details on how Facebook chooses material that appears in its popular news box. It shows how a combination of computer algorithms and human editors determine what should be a trending topic on a Facebook page. U.S. officials say they're watching extremely closely to ensure that China abides by its cybersecurity commitments following the first meeting between the two sides since they struck an anti-hacking agreement in September. On Wednesday, a group of Chinese and U.S. officials met to discuss international norms of state behavior and other issues. The Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs described the meeting, the so-called Senior Experts Group on International Norms and Related Issues, as positive, in-depth, and constructive. U.S., Canadian, and European delegates walked out of the Ugandan presidential inauguration ceremony Thursday in response to the presence of an indicted war crime suspect and President Yoweri Museveni's remarks disparaging the International Criminal Court. The U.S. State Department said Thursday that the U.S. delegation walked out of the ceremony in Kampala. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Friday, May 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The International Criminal Court urges Uganda to arrest war crime suspect and Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who is on a visit to Uganda.
Uganda is a state party to the ICC Rome Statute and thus has the obligation to cooperate with the ICC, including for the implementation of arrest warrants. And with regard to Mr. al-Bashir, there have been two arrest warrants delivered by the ICC judges against him.
Fadi El Abdallah is the spokesperson for the International Criminal Court. Meanwhile, the United States condemns Uganda for hosting President Bashir of Sudan. South Sudan government forces are accused of not cooperating in implementing security arrangements in the capital, Juba, and an anti-corruption summit has opened in London.
We are fighting a battle, all of us, for our states, for our countries, for our nation state. Corruption writ large is as much of an enemy, because it destroys nation states, as some of the extremists we're fighting.
That's U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Nigeria raises fuel prices to nearly 70%, and conflict resolution leads to greater harmony but worsens psychological health. Those stories plus Marco Uman Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The International Criminal Court, the ICC, has urged Uganda to abide by its obligations as a state party to the Rome Statute, which established the ICC. This came as Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir began a two-day official state visit to Uganda in defiance of two international arrest warrants issued against him. The ICC accuses President Bashir of committing war crimes and crimes against humanity in the conflict in Sudan's Darfur region, which has claimed more than 400,000 lives and displaced more than 2 million others. ICC spokesperson Fadi El Abdallah tells reporter Peter Clotty that the Hague-based court is following Bashir's visit.
Uganda is a state party to the ICC Rome Statute and thus has the obligation to cooperate with the ICC, including for the implementation of arrest warrants. And with regard to Mr. al-Bashir, there have been two arrest warrants delivered by the ICC judges against him after the prosecutor opened an investigation upon a referral by the United Nations Security Council. If not, then a procedure can be launched before the ICC judges where the state concerned will be invited eventually to present their observations. And based on that, the judges will decide whether or not there have been a violation of this obligation.
This is a direct quote from President Museveni. We lost interest in the ICC. ICC is none of our business. It is a useless body. We had supported the ICC initially thinking they were serious, but it is a bunch of useless people. What is your reaction to that?
Of course, naturally, you understand that there is an obligation for Uganda based on this membership to the states that are parties to the ICC. That means that there is an obligation that has to be respected, and that in case it's not respected, the ICC judges, if they found that there was indeed a violation, they can in this case inform the Security Council of this violation, because the investigation started based on the Security Council referral to the ICC. And in general terms, it's important to highlight again and again that the ICC is a judicial body that is independent and impartial and can issue arrest warrants and can make decisions. But there is a second pillar for the system to function, which is the cooperation of the states. If the states do not cooperate with the ICC, then they cannot receive the results that they are hoping for.
Now, Fadi, this is the second time an African country has taken such a decision. South Africa and now Uganda set to make that decision. Now, with this form of perceived non-cooperation, what is the next line of action for the ICC?
Well, it's only the ICC judges who can say whether or not there was a violation of the obligation to cooperate. And that is usually done after requesting observations from the concerned state on why they have not implemented the arrest warrants. Maybe there are valid reasons or not. It's only the ICC judges who can decide on it and can say indeed if there was or not a non-compliance. But if the ICC judges find that there was a non-compliance, In the case related to Mr. al-Bashir, they can inform the Security Council of this violation, and then it's up to the Security Council to decide what would be the appropriate measure. The ICC is not built to impose sanctions over states. It is a criminal international organization that has basically the mandate to investigate and prosecute individuals.
Fadi El Abdallah is the spokesperson for the International Criminal Court. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from The Hague, Netherlands. The United States has condemned Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni for hosting Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who is wanted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes for his role in the conflict in Sudan's Darfur region. Mr. Bashir is currently on a two-day state visit to Uganda. State Department spokesperson Elizabeth Trudeau says U.S. officials walked out of yesterday's inauguration ceremonies for President Museveni's fifth consecutive term in office in protest.
The United States has made its position with respect to Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir's travel very clear. We're concerned that President Bashir has been able to travel to Uganda as well as Djibouti in the past. In Kampala, President Museveni made disparaging remarks about the ICC in front of attendees, including other heads of state. In response to President Bashir's presence and President Museveni's remarks, the United States delegation, along with representatives of the European Union countries and Canada, departed the inauguration ceremonies to demonstrate our objection. We believe that walking out in protest is an appropriate reaction to a head of state mocking efforts to ensure accountability for victims of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity, particularly when his country has committed to accountability as a state party to the Rome Statute. While the United States is not a party to the Rome Statute, which is the treaty that established the ICC, we strongly support the ICC's efforts to hold accountable those responsible for genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes in Darfur.
The State Department spokesperson Elizabeth Trudeau speaking Thursday in Washington. Thursday's anti-corruption summit in London was a moment of introspection for the world's political elite, whose banking systems and real estate markets have often provided a haven for billions of dollars in stolen money. The summit brought together leaders of developing nations, but much of the focus was on the role that countries like Britain and the United States are playing in helping corrupt leaders hide stolen money. As VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez reports, leaders drew a strong connection between corruption and extremism.
It was anger over corruption in Tunisia that touched off the 2011 Arab Spring that spread to places like Syria and Libya, now hotbeds of extremism. For leaders meeting in London to tackle corruption, it is a matter of security.
We are fighting a battle, all of us, for our states, for our countries, for our nation state. Corruption writ large is as much of an enemy, because it destroys nation states, as some of the extremists were fighting.
This is where some of the stolen money historically has ended up. This area of central London is known to some as Red Square for its Russian-owned mansions. Britain's leader said the onus is on his country to act.
Why I think this matters so much is that I believe that corruption is the cancer at the heart of so many problems we need to tackle in our world.
10 years ago, summits like this would have focused on kleptocrats in the developing world. Anti-corruption campaigners saw this one as different. Rich countries took the blame.
We're really thinking about the providers of the financial secrecy that don't just facilitate but actively drive corruption of different sorts all around the world.
The leaders at the summit committed to expose and punish corruption. Cameron unveiled a plan to make public who the real owners of British registered companies are. Next comes the tough part.
The real issue, I think, for the UK is whether it can put together both global leadership, as the Prime Minister is showing here in London this week on this issue, with also ensuring that it's walking the walk and talking the talk itself.
Analysts say the world's elite are worried about a loss of legitimacy that comes from seeing the rich and powerful evade taxes and get away with it. The London summit is an attempt to show that the world's political elite are doing something about it. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, London.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, May 13th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's give a shout out this morning to listeners on our affiliate station, Diamond FM in Tamale, Ghana. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. 2 weeks after the former warring parties in South Sudan's conflict formed the Transitional Government of National Unity, ceasefire monitors say President Salva Kiir's forces are still not cooperating with security monitors for implementing security arrangements in the capital, Juba, as spelled out in the peace agreement. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from the capital, Juba.
Major General Mola Haile Mariam, who chaired the ceasefire transitional and security arrangements monitoring mechanism meeting, told the journalists that monitors still face resistance from the South Sudan senior army officers.
SITSAM is not in the position to declare completion of transitional security arrangement in Juba since the government has not declared its forces completely. It is my hope that with the formation of TIGONU, the outstanding issue can be addressed properly and expeditiously.
The ceasefire transitional and security arrangements monitoring mechanism is charged with ensuring full implementation of the security arrangements in Juba, Malakal, Bor, and Bentiu as per the August peace agreement. Mr. Kiir's military commanders are required by the terms of the peace agreement to redeploy some forces 25 kilometers out of Juba and inform monitors about the exact number of forces that were withdrawn from the capital. Haile Mariam says there has been a marked decline in violations of the permanent ceasefire by the two sides in recent weeks.
But we have observed that last few weeks it's very calm, quiet. We are very hopeful that we are shifting from investigating alleged violations to peaceful and formation of unified forces in this country.
Earlier this month, the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a body tasked with the monitoring progress of the peace agreement, called on both government and the SPLM in opposition to instruct their military commanders to fully implement the peace agreement. Some of the key obstacles to full implementation of the security arrangements include delays in the redeployment of government forces 25 kilometers outside Juba and the government's reluctance to allow cantonment areas for SPLAIO forces in Bahr el Ghazal and Equatorial regions. Haile Mariam also says monitors are repeatedly blocked by South Sudan security officials from carrying out their work in parts of the former Western Equatorial state. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Nigeria is raising gasoline prices by nearly 70% to address a persistent fuel shortage in the country. As Chris Stein reports from Lagos, the move comes amid rising inflation and follows an increase in electricity prices.
Bank employee Uchenna Nze has been waiting in line for hours to put gas in his car, and the pumps aren't even open yet. When they do open, he'll be paying a far higher price. Nze said the fuel hike is unfair, but he is willing to deal with it if that means he will not have to wait in line anymore.
If they should increase the price and let the status of fuel dissolve, fine.
Like the rest of the country, Lagos is grappling with a shortage of fuel. The Petroleum Ministry says it will resolve this scarcity by raising the price of fuel by 67%. Despite being one of Africa's top oil producers, Nigeria relies on imports for most of its gasoline. The ministry says the price hike will spur importers to bring in more fuel. It is the latest service to become more expensive in Nigeria. The government announced an increase in electricity prices last December. Meanwhile, inflation climbed to an annual rate of nearly 13% in March. In the northern city of Kaduna, Femi Adi said he worried that the jump in fuel prices would impact the cost of living.
The basic necessity of life is food, shelter, and clothing. These issues that I'm telling you, by tomorrow, will increase in the market.
The Nigeria Labor Congress released a statement saying it would meet Friday to discuss the increase in fuel and electricity prices. Labor Group President Ayuba Waba said the rising prices are harming workers.
For any other increase in any commodity or any service will have a direct impact on the working class because of the fact that their purchasing power has been reduced.
Waba declined to say if the Congress was considering striking over the fuel increase. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Some private media in Cameroon are refusing to cover the prime minister after he seized a reporter's equipment earlier this week. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, journalists say they are fed up with government intimidation, mistreatment, and difficulties in accessing information.
Private media in Cameroon say they are acting in solidarity with CRTV reporter Teke Julius. Julius was covering a visit by Prime Minister Philemon Yang to a stadium construction site when reporters say Yang personally grabbed Julius's equipment and ordered it destroyed. Julius was then detained by the police for several hours. Newspaper publisher Ndi Eugenity is the public relations officer of the Cameroon Association of English Newspaper Journalists.
Beside the boycott and blackout on any activity that the PM is present, the PM has to publicly apologize to all the journalists in Cameroon. What the Prime Minister did is total disrespect of journalists in Cameroon. In fact, total disrespect of the media as a whole.
Journalists reached out to Cameroon's National Communications Council to secure Julius's release. No charges have been filed. The president of the NCC told VOA the prime minister's aides say Julius had disrespected their boss, apparently positioning himself behind the prime minister during a press availability and touching him with the microphone. Julius says he was doing his job. The prime minister's office declined to comment. Private media say the government, including the prime minister's office, routinely deny reporters access to information. On the occasion of World Press Freedom Day, May 3rd, Cameroon's Minister of Communication, Issa Chiruma, issued a statement pledging zero tolerance for what he called unethical reporting.
La responsabilité sociale est mise à mal par une nouvelle race de reporters qui profitant.
He says the social responsibility of the journalist in Cameroon is undermined by journalists who take advantage of the internet to report only negative stories about Cameroon. Cameroon has been consistently rated not free by the watchdog group Freedom House in its annual Global Press Freedom Rankings. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
In violent civil conflicts where brother is sometimes pitted against brother and civilians might find themselves living next door to their tormentor, Truth and Reconciliation Commissions have sprung up as a way to encourage social healing. But a new study finds that public airing of grievances can also lead to a revisit of trauma on some victims who have suppressed their feelings. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
About 24 truth and reconciliation programs have taken place in war-weary countries after civil wars. In an effort to repair society torn by war, the commissions give victims of violence a chance to be heard and the perpetrators an opportunity for forgiveness. Such a truth and reconciliation process is taking place in the West African nation of Sierra Leone. New York University politics and economics professor Odella Dubé says on balance, the process has a positive effect on members of local communities.
They contributed more to public goods. They spent more time doing things like building roads and health clinics and donating to, you know, more to families in need. So in essence, they became much more community-oriented in their behavior.
But Dubé suspected not everyone benefited fully. Perhaps there were some who found the process of coming face-to-face with perpetrators revived memories of wartime trauma, worsening anxiety and depression. Supported by the World Bank, Georgetown University, and the NGO Innovations for Poverty Action, Dubé and her colleagues studied the truth panels to find out. A decade after the Civil War, they looked at 200 Sierra Leonean villages, half of which were randomly chosen to participate in the truth and reconciliation process. The researchers made an interesting discovery.
While there was all this positive force for societal healing, it was actually quite psychologically difficult for people who had gone through this process, and they exhibited greater anxiety, greater depression, and greater trauma as a result of having gone through the program.
Compared to villages where civilians did not face their tormentors, there was a 36% higher rate of post-traumatic stress. The findings were published in the journal Science. While Dubé stresses wartime atrocities should not be forgotten, she suggests there may be a way to ease the pain that results from the Truth and Reconciliation forums. The authors conclude the Truth and Reconciliation process should be reconstructed to help civilians traumatized by revisiting the trauma of war. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Sports Day. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with handball. In an all-Egyptian tie, Zamalek beat Heliopolis 36-31 in the men's semifinal at the African Handball Cup Winners' Cup Championship in Laayoune, Morocco, on Thursday. Similarly, in an all-Tunisian encounter, Esperance outplayed Hammamet 38-30 in the other semifinal. Meanwhile, in an all-Angolan women's semifinal, defending champions Primero de Agosto eliminated Progreso 30-19, while in an all-Cameroonian tie, Tournez Yaounde pipped the military side FAP 23-21. Tomorrow, Saturday, Zamalek play Esperance in the men's final, while Primero de Agosto tackle Tournez Yaounde in the women's final. In football, hosts Tunisia drew 1-1 with their under-20 peers from the Ivory Coast in a friendly match played in the Tunisian capital Tunis on Thursday. Both sides are gearing up for their Africa under-20 championship qualifiers next month. Elsewhere in women's football, South Africa hosts Zimbabwe in a friendly in Johannesburg on Sunday. They are set to represent Africa in the women's football contest at the Rio de Janeiro Olympics. In athletics, the Athletics Federation of Nigeria staged their first Golden League meeting of the year in the Nigerian capital Abuja tomorrow, Saturday. Nigeria's elite home-based athletes will be vying for the qualifying standard for the African Senior Athletics Championships next month and the Rio de Janeiro Olympics in August. In rugby news, Kenya take on Portugal as South Africa tackle England at the start of the penultimate tournament in the 10-leg IRB 7 series in the French capital Paris today, Friday. Kenya will also play Russia and New Zealand in their other Group A fixtures, while South Africa are set to face Brazil and Australia in the other Group C encounters. Going into today's action, South Africa is second in the series standings with 139 points. Kenya is 7th with 85 points and Zimbabwe is 17th with 1 point. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S., Canadian, and European delegates walked out of the Ugandan presidential inauguration ceremony on Thursday in response to the presence of an indicted war crimes suspect and President Yoweri Museveni's remarks disparaging the International Criminal Court. The U.S. State Department said Thursday that U.S. delegation walked out of the ceremony in Kampala, which was attended by Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who has been indicted by the International Criminal Court in The Hague for genocide and crimes against humanity in Sudan's war-ravaged Darfur region. And Thursday, World Summit on Fighting Corruption was a time for Britain and the United States to look at their own policies and their role as shelters for billions of dollars stolen in developing countries. That's it for this Friday, May 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss whether there's a need for a fundamental change in U.S.-Africa relations. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they discuss U.S.-Africa relations next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk. Job hunting. What you need to know when job hunting. Join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing job hunting. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Donald Trump comes.